And a pleasant good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Fans in the Pro. Mike Austin, Deuce McAllister, Charlie Long manning the booth. Big afternoon for you as we talk Saints football, Saints in Dallas. We'll be speaking with Brad Sham, the longtime voice of the Dallas Cowboys play-by-play. He'll join us around 4:30 at 5:20. We'll talk LSU football with Wilson Alexander, the Advocate of the Times-Picayune, as they get ready for South Carolina tomorrow, 11 o'clock our time, 12 o'clock in South Carolina. And at 5:30, Matty Hudak, the Tulane football sideline reporter, host of the Before the Whistle podcast, as Tulane travels to Norman, Oklahoma to take on the Sooners. Big weekend. Deuce, how are you?
I am well, sir. Glad to be at least safe, and we hope that everyone is safe with always an interesting week when you have to deal with hurricane weather, and, you know, life doesn't stop. It continues on, and that's kind of where we are with the preparation with the upcoming games this week.
Right. I mean, it's just different. Maybe we're just used to it. I mean, that is one of the things that we are going to do because a lot of our listeners, it's such a wide, wide area. Right after the news at 5 o'clock, we're going to speak with Jason Bergeron, who's the president of Terrebonne Parish Consolidated Government. So give us an update on the Terrebonne Parish and all of the recovery and reconnecting that so many parishes are doing. And for us, it was, you know, the Saints practiced a little early on Wednesday, had extra meetings with Zoom, a few extra meetings on Thursday. But for the most part, they were able to get as much work done as necessary. In Dallas, it was 80 degrees and sunny. They're like, what are y'all talking about? You know, it's just kind of the challenges that go along with it. And
well, not only that, think about the college teams.
Right.
Think about the college teams. I mean, you just named a couple of them. And then the high school teams, I know for a lot of high school, they were out. And so now they don't get to practice.
Right.
And some games, you know, have been moved to Saturday. Some were already probably scheduled for Saturday. But, you know, think about the conditions of some of those fields, particularly if they're not a turf field.
Right.
And now you're trying to play on it. And we know the last couple of weeks you've had nothing but rain. And it's going to be interesting.
Man, it has been – you're right. It has been tough weather-wise. It's feast or famine. It's feast or famine in this area. We're used to it, and we hope everybody continues to kind of get back to, you know, where things were from a power standpoint. We wish everybody the best, and we'll get a Terrebonne update. I guess really the only two new items from a Saints injury standpoint, Brian Brzee was ill today, and also some back stiffness for Isaiah Foskey, and because of that, they're both listed as questionable. The biggest one out there to me, anyway, would be probably Marshon Lattimore with the hamstring. He had the hip and the hamstring. Now it's just a hamstring. So Dennis Allen said today he's traveling. He'll travel, and you know, kind of intimated be a game time decision.
Those two, particularly Brian Brzee and Foskey, are big, but there's a little. You have to look a little close in there, but there's one player who had a big game last week that was a full participant and then he went to a limit. Wide receiver. And you're looking and you're looking and you're looking.
I was looking at A.T. Perry, but no, not A.T. Perry. Wide receiver who was limited then full, or full then limited?
Yep.
DeMarco, Marshawn, Tyron, Lucas, Saunders, Ford, Fuaga, Holker, Morrow, Perry, Saldivari. Good job.
You're
I got to squeeze the page down. Yeah. Rashid Shaheed was full practice, and limited today with a finger in a hip. Thank you. So
the other two that are big are Fuaga and Lattimore. And so I don't think it'll be anything with Rashid, but we do know that he has missed some time with camp. Missed some time at camp, and then he was fine, had that fantastic game, and then, you know, just something pops up from a limited standpoint. I think, you know, he should be fine, but it's always something to watch, particularly when it pops up on a Friday. And so, look, we just talked about the weather. We talk about the injuries. You think Dallas cares?
The heck no. Week two?
Yeah.
You think in week 15 we're going to look back and go, hey, remember we had the storm? Nobody
cares.
Nobody cares. They barely even know we had a storm.
Yeah, and so they don't feel sorry for you.
No.
Let me put it that way. So your leg hurts? Okay, that's fine. Come on and play. You know, if you can't play, send somebody else out here that can play. I mean, and so at the end of the day, a game has to be played. And from the coach's standpoint, it makes it a little tougher because not only do you have to get that player ready to play, but if he's not able to go, now I got to get another player ready to play. And I got to make sure that he's up to speed and can handle the playbook. And so the Saints have some pretty good depth at certain positions that they feel really good about. Probably at some other positions, we know we can do it, but we can't put this player in this situation, or we can't put that player in that situation. But really, that's across the board in the NFL for certain certain position groups. You know, that's across the board for certain position groups throughout the NFL. And so I think it'll be a good challenge for this team to see if they are as good as they think they are, or can they go out and get better from week one to week two? Because that's normally where you see a pretty good percentage of improvement. And we can go through the numbers and look at it. Hey, you can get better here. You can get better here. Can you limit these penalties? Can you limit these mistakes and put the complete game together? That's always the goal.
The notables from Dallas's standpoint would really be the tight ends, kind of very similar to last week with Carolina. They have Jake Ferguson, who's their starter. He's doubtful. He injured his knee in the second half against Cleveland. And then John Stevens, another tight end, he's got hamstring issues. He hadn't practiced. He's already out. So, that position, other than that, he's the only one listed as out for Dallas, and Jake Ferguson is doubtful for them. And you're right. When you look at these two teams, if somebody's going to kind of maybe not come to earth, but from an offensive standpoint, they very much mirror each other from an effective ball. Neither offense had a turnover. Both of them were 100% red zone, goal to go. Both of them put points on the board. Both of them, now this is a team thing, penalties. Dallas had 11, Saints had 10 for 95 yards. So both of them, from a special team standpoint, again, mirror each other. Aubrey and Blake Groupie, 4 for 4. Three for three from an extra point for Aubrey. Groupie, man, just 4 for 4, 5 for 5 extra point, 10 kickoffs. Between the two, they had 18 kickoffs. So
Dallas did have their house call. Saints, we kind of tackled our man on the house call. But both of them did have big punt returns. Dallas was able to score on theirs. We weren't able to score on ours. Now, I don't think that Dallas had a block.
No.
Dallas did not have a block as far
as the
point.
In fact, if we were really nitpicking, we would say Dallas probably struggled a little bit punt coverage. Cleveland did a decent job on some returns, and Devontae Turpin is the guy who brought it back to the house, 60 yards. He had a couple of other really significant kickoff returns and or punt returns that were negated by two of those 11 penalties. So I was kind of where, that whole Rashid Shaheed, Devontae Turpin, Brandon Aubrey, Blake Groupie, and games like this, special teams, it's
going to be huge.
Yeah.
Going to be huge. I mean, this won't be an opportunity special teams-wise for you to get up and go to the restroom. I mean, because if you do, you're going to miss something. And I'll be interested. I will be truly interested to see how those special team coaches – not necessarily attack the returners, but how much respect do you give the returners? Do you just kick it through the end zone and tell them, yep, we'll just give it to you at the 30? Or we're going to trust our coverage unit, saying that we don't believe that you can return it, out past the 30. And on punts, I mean, if you don't get hang time with either of these guys, they can both take it to the house.
Right. Anger punted a few more times than Hayball, who didn't punt till late in the fourth quarter. And that goes back to what you were talking about earlier. So play devil's advocate. No Rashid Shaheed. Is that Cedric Wilson and Taysom on kickoff returns and Cedric Wilson on punt returns?
I don't think Cedric would be on kickoff returns. I think that they would put another guy.
Jamal. Jamal and Taysom.
I don't know. Yeah, I think they probably want some speed back there.
Yeah.
I think they want some speed back there. You want a threat. I don't. And there's no knock against the other guys, but I want some speed. I got one thumper in Taysom, but I want a guy that has some top end speed. And so, it'll be interesting to see how they kind of handle it and how they shuffle it. And then on the returns, if I for sure want to catch it, then it's probably Cedric. But if I want to return it, I'm going to get me a guy that can catch it, and then he's got a little get out to him. You know, what would be interesting, if Lattimore is up, a guy that we've seen back there that they flirted with is Alonte Taylor.
Alonte Taylor.
Yeah, if Lattimore is up, and I'm not worried about Lattimore in that game, now I can use Alonte Taylor a lot more. I would definitely look at using him on a kickoff return.
He would love it. You'd hear him on the field in Irvine. He returning. Man, reminds me of my quarterback days when he was in high school in Tennessee. Gotta take a break. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister, fans and the pro. Keep it right here. WWLAMFM.com and always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back, fans and the pro. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister. Want to thank Magazine Pizza at 1068 Magazine. Dine in or delivery. The best gourmet pizza selection in town. Magazine Pizza also has pastas, sandwiches, wings, and salads. MagazinePizza.com. They have and have been and will continue to be feeding the Saints broadcast team on the weekend, and so we appreciate all that they do. We're going to be spending a lot of time today with Saints and LSU and Tulane, and if you flipped on the radio any kind of sports talk today, the talk was last night's Buffalo-Miami game to Tagovailoa. With his at least third concussion. And, man, that's, forget anything else about the season. We don't play either team this year. You just feel for the kid, right? I mean, this is all he's known is football for so long. He just, like, and now there's just total strangers, and I'm not going to be one, to just tell him what to do, right? Just giving their advice on what to do with his life. It's just tough.
Mike, it may be total strangers, but at some point you have to have a hard conversation. That's what it's about. You could be as young as you want, but at some point you have to have the hard conversation, and that's the hard conversation because it's one thing to say, hey, Deuce, this is your seventh or eighth knee surgery. If you have another one, you may not be able to walk again. It's a little bit different situation.
Right.
And you have some information. I mean, he will have probably the best doctors, neuro guys out there in the world, and at some point I have to listen to those guys, and you know, I have to listen to myself, my body, from what it's telling me, and then the team has to have some type of responsibility as well. I mean, it's tough, and we know of the three, I guess, within the last 2 years, but I think right. It's five.
That's why that when you
over
you
the
hear,
last
right.
4 years, or at least four over the last 5 years, if you include the Alabama one, and so it's a tough conversation to have. But at some point, it's one that you have to have. And here's what's interesting: is I don't know if the league will give Miami any relief from a contract standpoint because he just redid that deal.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, and it's a what 4 year deal? You know, a whole bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure there's some injury clauses in there. So if, and we all know this is an injury situation. So from a financial standpoint, I know you want to compete and you want to do all that good stuff, but I don't know if the league is going to give any relief to the Dolphins if he does walk away. You know, and that's
week two, right? I mean, they are just, I mean, you're just facing.
He's how old? You're 25, you're 26. So from a football standpoint, that becomes null and void. You know, you've got to care about the young man at some point.
Right. No, I believe me. I do. That's kind of where I am. I'm like, I forget everything else. This, you know, he's a kid. He's a kid, man. And so you just hope the best for him, and we'll leave it at that. We're going to talk with the Dallas Cowboys, voice of the Cowboys, Brad Sham, just a legendary voice of the Cowboys. See what the Pokes have in mind for Sunday in Arlington. Back after this, fans of the pro, Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister, WWL AMFM, always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back, fans of the pro, Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister, and we are honored now to be joined by Brad Sham, the longtime voice of the Dallas Cowboys. Brad, how are you this fine afternoon?
I'm doing all right, Mike, but who said you're not a legend?
Well, many, my wife, Deuce, my parents, my sister, the list goes on.
Well, you got to get to somebody more objective. None of those people's ever going to help you.
Well, let me tell you this. I'll get right to the game, but when I was a young sportscaster, or younger, in Lubbock, Texas, They sent me out to Thousand Oaks, California for a couple of years and to cover the Cowboys as they were in training camp. And you were the voice then, and you were kind of iconic then. And 40-plus years, you've seen it all and done it all. So I lead into that by saying somebody is probably going to have to come back to earth a little bit on Sunday with these teams. Very convincing wins by both, right?
Yeah, I mean, nothing's really happened yet. When Deuce played, Deuce, how you doing today, man?
Doing good, Mr. Brad. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. You know, when Deuce played, those guys, even the really good players, had played in two or three preseason games. Am I right, Deuce?
That's correct.
These guys are now in preseason. Practice is good. You take a step back. It's now been 13 years since the CBA, which has since been tweaked, that has taken away time with the conditioning coaches in the off season and the regular season, and has limited the number of padded practices they can have year round. So I understand why they did that. That's good. I'm a union guy too. And I don't know that that's conducive to playing consistent football. So now, I don't know what the Saints did, but Mike McCarthy the last few years has just not been one who wanted his most important players to be exposed to injury. And I think that's the right way to go. I know everybody does it different. But the point of all that, Mike, is that we've just finished, in essence, in many cases, playing the first preseason game, except all the players played and it counted. So when you talk about coming back to earth, I don't think anybody except the Chiefs knows exactly what they have and won't for a month. There's a lot of people who think they know what they have, but you're going to have to play a few games against different kinds of opponents who do different things. One game is not even a sample size. It's good that both teams started well. You'd rather start well than start poorly. But I just don't put a whole lot of stock in it yet. And then if we talk again in a month, then we might have a little better idea.
Yeah, Mr. Brown, I think when you talk about it and listening to your train of thought, it's just you've got to figure out what identity you truly have as a team, and that's offense and defense. But I do think we agree with one thing. If you have a pretty good amount of veterans that have been there and done that, you can accelerate that process, or at least that concept. It still is going to take some time, but you have a fairly good idea of what a veteran player, particularly a guy that's done it, you know, 2 years, 3 years, what he is going to be in or who he can be.
Yeah, and that's right, Deuce, because they have a better idea themselves. So then if you have – you can't have too many veterans because they won't last by veterans, I'm talking about 5 years and up. You said 2 or 3 years, and that is now a veteran player. If you have the right sprinkling of smart veterans and a quarterback and you can play defense – then you've got a chance to be playing for something all year. And it's the ones with the uncertainty in any of those areas that are doing a little extra self-scouting. But that's right. And both of these teams have some veteran guys who have been around the block and know how to play and know exactly how to make changes as games go along. And I think that's good. That makes it an interesting game.
You talked about Coach Mike McCarthy. Mike was my OC here in New Orleans way back when I was here and he was here in New Orleans. Talk about the usage of some, and I call them toys. You know, you have Dak at quarterback, and you have the toys on the outside in the backfield, even at tight end and up front, offensive line wise. Tell me a little bit about offensively and with the pressure that you have to win and be successful, how he's kind of adjusted to those playmakers and to Dak, you know, just being the leader and the signal caller that he is.
Well, the Dak as a leader is, I'm, you know, as Mike said, I've been doing this with this franchise for quite a while. And Dak, this is a mouthful, but I know what I'm talking about. Dak's as good a leader as they've ever had. How good a quarterback he is will be determined by his career. But, you know, Staubach and Aikman are in the Hall of Fame, partly because of what they were on the field and partly because of who they are as men. And Dak Prescott's their equal. That's a mouthful, but I believed in him just from watching him when he had to take over under duress in 2016. So it starts with that. They trust him. And now you still got to have pieces around you. So they do have some pretty good weapons. I think they're still trying to figure out what they have at running. You have any eligibility left, Deuce?
Nope, that's gone either. But the knees are the problem.
Yeah, well, I'm right there with you, brother. I think they're still trying to figure out what they've got at running back. They think, I'm going to give them credit and say it's more than hope, because hope's not a plan. They believe that they have the pieces to have an effective running game, which is a different thing now than it was 20 years ago. People talk about wanting balance in offense, and their balance is probably 60-40 in a percentage toward the pass. And Mike's evolved as a play caller, and he's very fond of talking about the fact that it was his idea to have Kellen Moore stay on as the offense coordinator and the play caller for Mike's first 3 years here. And then Kellen went to Philadelphia. Mike did what he probably in his heart wanted to do all along, which was call the plays. So he talks about, well, we're in the second year of our system. Well, you're in the fifth year of you being the head coach, but okay. So he does a few more things that you're a little more familiar with. Everybody, it doesn't take long to get some injuries, right? So I'm not sure that we're going to see their tight end. They haven't listed him as out. And we'll see what happens when they go back on the field tomorrow. I'd be a little surprised at this juncture if he played. So that's a big weapon because he's a good player. I think they are adequate at running back. I think they've got pretty good wide receivers. It's fun watching their O-line because you've got two really young guys who did okay the first week, and they're going to get a new graduate lesson every week for a while. And their heads will spin, but they both look like they're going to be pretty good players. But you're going to have to be able to run the ball. You know, everybody loves scoring points. And at the beginning of last year, Dallas, they did last year a little bit of what they did Sunday, which is the point total is high, but if you get one or two defensive scores, you get a kick return for a touchdown, and the game gets out of hand and you're playing a different, that kind of skews everything. But they do have the ability, they have some versatility, they have some veteran guys, and they've got the ability to do what most offenses would like to be able to do now, which is be multiple in their looks and show you a lot of window dressing so you're trying to figure out what it all means, and then they run the same basic small handful of plays. But I think they're equipped to be competitive offensively all year, and the quarterback's good.
What about defense? I mean, defense is typically ahead of the offenses at this point, and Dallas, you know, people might focus on the 6 sacks, but to me, it's the 17 quarterback hits on a fairly elusive quarterback in Deshaun Watson. So now you're talking 23 of Cleveland's 70 offensive plays where the Dallas defense was disruptive. And whenever you got Micah Parsons, and who can line up, I mean, lines up standing up over the center or out wide to the left, he can be pretty much anywhere. I mean, that Dallas defense is for real.
Well, I hope it's for real. But, you know, they've played one game under right. a new system that is drastically different. What Dan Quinn did here the last 3 years was really important, because when they came in 2020, Dan and that defensive staff were not here. And they had statistically, I believe I'm right in this, they had statistically the worst defensive year they'd had in the history of the franchise in 2020. Now, I understand COVID, no training camp, but you don't have to be the worst you've ever been. But they were. So he changed the entire staff and hired Dan. And what Dan did in terms of bringing in personnel, literally changing the entire defensive culture, was critical to them being able to win 12 games 3 years in a row. And Dan likes kind of different players than Mike Zimmer likes. And so last year's a great – I thought the last 2 years – they were not their strongest in December, which you want to be. And last year especially, they had an injury or two, and so they had safeties playing linebacker, which is kind of okay with Dan because he wants fast players and players who are built like Jayron Kearse, who had a couple of great years here. Mike's different. And so they're very fortunate to have a guy like Parsons who, as Deuce says, can play almost anywhere. And they'll show him everywhere. But the it's night and day, the linebackers, from anything they've had in the last 3 years and the way they use them. And even without Deron Bland, I think their secondary is solid. Now, it'll get tested this week, but I think the secondary is solid. The linebackers are a plus. I think that, you know, the funny thing is, Deuce, they literally remade their defensive line in the last week and a half of camp when they brought in Jordan Phillips and Linval Joseph and Lawson, who's on the practice squad. I mean, those guys weren't there, and they had to have them. They just were not going to be good enough in the defensive line. Well, now they might be able to be competitive, and because the linebackers are have the skill sets that they do, it gives them a chance. I have just seen too many to get too excited after one game. I do love watching Parsons. I think DeMarcus Lawrence is so solid. He's a tremendous run player, could play for my team any day. I think that Oso Digizua is a vastly underrated tackle, and I think everybody who gets an opportunity to watch DeMarvion Overshown, who had never seen him in school, that he's a treat to watch. He is very fast and physical. So those are all good things. But Cleveland had one set of looks. You know, Deshaun Watson hadn't played much football in 2 years. And that's not what they're getting in Derek Carr. And so I think Cleveland was somewhat hampered, and Njoku went out early in the game. And the Saints show them something completely different. So, Deuce, when they have played, they're going to get Baltimore next week. And then I think the Giants. Yeah, when we get into that part of the calendar, then we can talk about whether their defense is – for real, but that, based on one game, it was encouraging.
Well, we'll find out on Sunday, my friend, and we greatly, greatly appreciate your time on a Friday afternoon to spend some time with us. We look forward to visiting in Arlington, and we'll talk to you on Sunday.
All right, Mike. Look forward to it. Thank you. Deuce, be well.
You too. Thanks, Brad.
Brad Sham, longtime voice of the Dallas Cowboys and the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. Take a break. Fans of the Pro, Mike Cost, Deuce McAllister, back after this. WWLAMFM.com and always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister. Don't forget to, you can have this show delivered to you at any time, directly on your phone, absolutely free. Listen to all of the shows that they have here, or just a specific hour, or the hottest clips. Download the Odyssey app and follow Sports Talk. It's that easy. We realize you can't always listen to the entire show live. We make it easy for you to listen when you want, how you want, and any of WL's shows that you love. So download the free Odyssey app today and take control, or just tell your smart speaker, play WWL. Mike Austin, Deuce McAllister, fans of the Pro News coming up here at 5 o'clock. And you talked about Mike McCarthy. I was going to ask you. So he's the Saints offensive coordinator from 2000 to 2004. Then he became San Francisco's OC. Then he became the longtime coach of Green Bay. I mean, just tell me, you know, what's his philosophy? What's his coaching resume, if you will?
He's changed. You heard it was 60-40 from the pass.
Yeah, pass to run right now.
It used to be more heavy run to pass. I mean, and you know, Mike was up at Green Bay as well. I mean, he was maybe Seattle and Green Bay previous to New Orleans. But, you know, I was looking at their coaches. An interesting name on that his coaching list was a young man that was probably a baby when I was playing. Not necessarily a baby, but Chase Haslett. Jim's son? Yeah.
Oh, my God. I just feel older.
Yeah, well, me and you both.
Oh, my gosh. No, I didn't know that.
Me and you both. And if I remember correctly, I think Chase played at Boston College. I think he played at Boston College. And so, obviously, that's a name. And Mike Zimmer, the defensive coordinator, you know, he and Sean Payton go back. And, you know, we've played against Zim when he was the head coach at Minnesota. And so, you're familiar with what Zim likes to do, what Mike likes to do, and if you look at some of the roster, you see some Zim guys on that defense.
They just brought him up. Brad talked about Linval Joseph
as well as Kendricks, the linebacker, and so he's going to get his guys in that knows his system, but I think that helps the Saints as well. Now, it's not the same offense, but you've played against Minnesota. You know what they like to do. Now you try to marry the personnel to the system. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. But yeah, some interesting things. But Mike has changed. It's still West Coast, but he's going to favor what the quarterback likes to do.
Chase Haslett is the pass game specialist for Dallas. Fans of the Pro, Mike Austin, Deuce McAllister. We're back for the 5 o'clock hour to talk LSU and Tulane. Both have big games this weekend. We'll talk about that. More Saints in Dallas. But first, the news is next here on WWL. Welcome back, everyone, to Fans of the Pro. For the next hour, we'll be talking, of course, Saints in Dallas, as we have been. We'll also talk LSU football as they take on South Carolina to begin SEC play. And Tulane will be at Oklahoma tomorrow at 2:30 to take on the Sooners. So we'll talk a little Tulane football and LSU as well. And we always, this is just the way it is when we get into these shows. Sometimes on Friday, it becomes a little heavy opponent, right? And so we don't spend as much time talking about the Saints. And I was just curious, one of the things Coach Allen talked about post-game in the press conference was he brought up the stat that the Saints had run the ball. They were averaging, but he said it was best in the NFL, 2.9 yards prior to contact. And I've heard the stat before, but you don't hear it a great deal. And I would imagine from your aspect and from a running game, that, I guess, put that into perspective for me.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, but it tells you that they are blocking up the line of scrimmage, and normally the backs are getting to the second and third level is basically what that means. And right. So the D-line, they're out of the equation. So you're getting a hat on a hat. Even from an offensive lineman's perspective that is pushing up to the linebackers, which is considered the second level, you're getting a hat on him. And if you aren't getting a hat on him, he isn't getting a hand on you until you're right at 3 yards down the field or, you know, from where the ball is snapped. Normally a running back, you want to average 4.5 yards per carry. If I am at 3 yards before I get touched, I can fall forward for, you know, one yard just in itself. So at some point, you're going to make a man miss, and that's a third level guy. And that's where the big runs come out. So you talk about having plus 10, plus 20, plus 30-yard runs. That's what they're able to do. But from an assignment standpoint, they know what they're supposed to do because they're getting a hat on a hat. Now it's can you break a big one, or if you aren't breaking a big one, you're getting plus 7, plus 8 type runs.
Well, last year Alvin's longest run from scrimmage was 17. He had 17 yards on Sunday,
yeah.
Right? And Jamal had a 14-yarder. Taysom had a 12-yarder. I mean, it's, you know, it's not 20-plus, but let me tell you, man, those runs were huge.
Here's the other thing. If you go back and you look at it,
there were a couple runs, and this is no knock on the receiver because, I mean, it is what it is. There's a couple runs that if a receiver and or a tight end finish, I won't even say just receiver. If the Saints finish some blocks, just finish, you will have some plus 30-yard runs, even maybe even longer, but at least plus 30. I mean, because as a back, particularly as a running back, even Taysom, and I'm going to throw you in there, if you get up on the safety more than once in a game and you can't make him miss, shame on you. Shame on you. You can't let a safety tackle you 100% of the time. You can't let a corner tackle you 100% of the time. So those got to be 50-50. I've got to win my 50-50 runs where I'm matched up on a safety or a corner, and I've got to be able to make him miss, and I've got to, I got to house call something. I just can't allow that guy to tackle me and he be the last line of defense every time and he makes that tackle. At some point, I have to make him miss and be able to make a house call.
I think that's what you talked about with Alvin's long run, is that he had that one safety to beat.
That's
and
it.
If he, when he sees that film, he's going to go, man, I should have beat
close.
That dude.
Right. I'm close. Yeah. I'm close to breaking it. And so that's the next level as a player that you have to take it to. And so I was originally fussing about the receivers not finishing blocks, but then it popped up in my head. No, there was one inside run, and I think it kind of surprised Fuaga, you know, because he's already 8 yards down the field. You're normally thinking, the play is over. But Alvin ended up right on his hip. And not to say that it was his guy that fell off, because I don't think it was. I think it was a safety. But it was his guy that Alvin kind of saw as a runner. You see the flash of another color. And now you say, oh, I can't go there. I have to take this angle and maybe approach this guy by taking half a man. But if I finish that run, now I have a three-way go at that defender where I can set him up, where I can hit him inside, I can hit him right, I can go right at him. And it's just playing games. I mean, it's playing the game. But it doesn't happen if the guy's up front, if they don't get a hat on hat. And now every run I'm having to make a guy miss at the line of scrimmage or in the backfield, man, that's tough sled.
2.9 yards before contact. We'll talk a little LSU at South Carolina when we come back from the break. This is Fans of the Pro. Mike Costus McAllister here on WWLAMFM.com. Always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back to Fans of the Pro. Mike Costus McAllister until 6 o'clock tonight. Joining us now, Wilson Alexander covers LSU for the Advocate and the Times-Picayune. The Tigers, 16th ranked, 1-1, take on South Carolina, 2-0, and as they begin SEC play on the road. 11 o'clock in the morning Central Time, but a noon kickoff in South Carolina. Wilson, how are you this afternoon?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We are well. You're on with Deuce McAllister and myself. Just kind of break it down for us. It feels like the LSU season the last couple of years has kind of gone on that opening game. Then you come home and you kind of get your feet under you. Then you begin the SEC. So it just kind of break this down for us as they begin SEC play against South Carolina.
Yeah, you know, I came across a stat today how there are two coaches in LSU history who have lost a season opener and then gone on to win 10 games, Brian Kelly and Paul Dietzel. Dietzel did it in 1961. Kelly is now trying to do it for the third straight year. LSU is, unfortunately for them, very familiar with this position of losing the season opener now here for the fifth straight season, the third under Kelly, kind of having a tune-up game in week two and then going into SEC play in week three. The last 2 years, that started with Mississippi State. Now here, it's on the road at South Carolina. You've got an LSU team that's trying to work through a few different things, get the run game going on the offensive side, continue to improve on the defensive side in a couple of different ways, and make up for the loss of Jacoby and Guillory up front. And so, you know, now it's about trying to get those things cleaned up and to try to make the 12-team college football playoff in year three. That is still going to be this team's goal, but their margin for error, once again, is really, really, really slim.
Yeah, Wilson, that's what I was going to really ask you about from an offensive standpoint, trying to get that run game going. You know about the weapons on the outside, but in the backfield and really with up front, you probably hadn't established the run as you would want to at this point, and losing one of your lead backs definitely hurts you in that standpoint. But just tell us so far, in your opinion, what they have to do to be able to have a little bit more balance or at least run the football against Carolina.
they have to be able to get some kind of just push up front. I mean, LSU's got these different run schemes kind of in place this year compared to last year when they were very heavy inside zone, zone read with Jaden Daniels. Now it's much more trying to lean on the offensive line. And, you know, you're seeing counters, you're seeing, you know, pulling guards on those sorts of plays. You're seeing, you know, tosses out from the shotgun. That's different from what LSU did last year. And it just, for whatever reason, hasn't really taken hold. And that's surprising because you've got an offensive line with four returning starters. I mean, all four guys who have played together for 3 years. And while they were doing some different things the last 2 years in the run game, this hasn't worked yet. Brad Davis told the players on Tuesday he was probably going to be spending the night at the facility trying to kind of work through these things. Brian Kelly said this week that kind of try to tamp down concerns, talking about, you know, they have gotten a lot of loaded boxes, so they've checked to some pass plays and some quick game stuff, and the passing game is almost acts as an extension of the run game, and that he thinks that balance is just, you know, doing both things effectively, not necessarily being 50-50, you know, moving forward. But you hear from the players this week, especially Emory Jones, starting right tackle, and they know this is unacceptable. You know, Will Campbell coming out of this preseason was saying, like, we're going to run the football. We don't mind saying it to everybody, like, we're going to run the football, and they haven't been able to do that. Other than a little stretch there in the third quarter with John Emery against USC, they've been really ineffective in the run game. I mean, only 21 carries for 64 yards against Nichols, and that's not going to get it done as you go into SEC play.
Especially a South Carolina defense, you know, they're pretty strong in their SEC opener. They go on the road, win at Kentucky 31-6, Kentucky just 44 total yards passing. So it does feel like a strength versus strength. LSU's offensive line, I mean, they, you know, haven't given up a sack in two games against the South Carolina defensive front. You know, something's got to give for one side.
Absolutely. That's definitely where this game seems to come down to, is which of those strengths is going to be able to kind of top the other one. South Carolina's defense ranks top 10 nationally in sacks, tackles for loss, forced fumbles, and interceptions. They've created quite a bit of havoc. They got 10 sacks, 19 tackles for loss, really led by their two edge rushers, Dylan Stewart and Kyle Kennard. Stewart's a freshman who's been really impressive through 2 weeks. Kennard's a senior. They've also got two big defensive tackles, Tonka Hemingway being one of them. The name of the other is suddenly slipping my memory. But guys who are, you know, 6'4", 300-plus pounds right there in the middle. And that's really been the strength of this South Carolina defense. But they've got some solid players in the secondary as well, Kilgore being the name to know back there. And that's really why they got out to such a big lead against Kentucky. But offensively, they don't really scare you in a lot of ways. So if LSU's offensive line, it's really a big game for them. If they can establish the run, then LSU should probably be I think in a comfortable position in this game, because it might be hard for South Carolina's offense to keep up, even though that's kind of on the other side of the ball, weakness versus weakness. But, you know, that defensive front for South Carolina and how LSU is able to handle them is really where this comes down to. Although LSU's offensive line has struggled in the running game, they have yet to allow a sack this season, so that's a good sign.
Wilson, are you in Columbia?
Yes, I'll be there. Currently in Charlotte, but yeah, we'll be in Columbia.
No. So that's why I was gonna ask you, you know, just what the feel was in the city, and you know, just what the enthusiasm that you could feel around it. But I mean, even in Charlotte, that's a city that pretty much pulls for USC for South Carolina.
Yeah, I haven't been able to get a sense of that from where we are, unfortunately, yet. The most I can say about that is just sort of talking to people who cover South Carolina. There's clearly a buzz that hasn't been there consistently for a while. And, I mean, you know, College Game Day is going down there this weekend. The weather seems like it's going to end up cooperating tomorrow. There was some thunderstorms in the forecast. We'll see kind of how that factors into things. But, you know, South Carolina, after struggling week one against Old Dominion, you know, it was all of a sudden kind of a trendy little team. And I don't know why I said little, but, like, you know, they're kind of a trendy team there. I mean, in terms of, like, can they start to create any sort of noise? And a win against LSU would do that. So, especially with College Game Day coming to town, it sounds like there's a lot of excitement down there.
Talking about the quarterbacks a little bit, certainly as LSU tries to find, you know, the replacement for John Emery, you know, Nussmeier with 6 touchdown passes last week against Lenoris Sellers, who can really, you know, had 2 touchdown passes, but also can move the ball with his feet, and kind of look at that matchup a little bit.
You're saying, I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, just talk about the two quarterbacks, Nussmeier against Lenoris Sellers. Sellers, you know, has moved the ball throwing, but also is a threat to run as well.
Yeah, he is. You know, Lenoris Sellers is someone that Brian Kelly compared to sort of an Anthony Richardson type in terms of really big and physical. He ran, I think, 22 times for about 68 yards in South Carolina's opening game. Didn't run as much against Kentucky, but they also have Robbie Ashford, his backup, who LSU fans might remember from Auburn. Guys can be pretty fast. He came in there and ran the ball six times against Kentucky. And that's what really South Carolina really wants to do, is run the football. I mean, they're tied with Tennessee for ninth, the most rush attempts in the SEC through two games with 90. That is their identity. They haven't been very successful with it. They're averaging less than 3 yards per carry, but that's still what they want to do. And Sellers is a part of that in the run game with the quarterback. But he's also got a big arm. But they just don't have necessarily the weapons on the outside that, like, LSU has. Whereas with Nussmeier, that's what this offense has been to this point. You know, it's been, we're literally leaning on him and these wide receivers, guys like Kyron Lacy and Aaron Anderson, who's really stepped up, and some others, and Mason Taylor from the tight end position. And that's going to maybe continue to be what LSU has to go to as its strength is, you know, Nussmeier in the passing game. The one element that they need to kind of continue to work on in that passing game is the deep shots, which we know Garrett has the arm strength for. They just haven't really connected on anything deep downfield yet that's really impactful this season, other than, I suppose, a 41-yarder to...
Welcome back, everyone, to Fans of the Pro. For the next hour, we'll be talking, of course, Saints in Dallas, as we have been. We'll also talk LSU football as they take on South Carolina to begin SEC play, and Tulane will be at Oklahoma tomorrow at 2:30 to take on the Sooners. So we'll talk a little Tulane football and LSU as well. And we always, this is just the way it is when we get into these shows. Sometimes on Friday, it becomes a little heavy opponent, right? And so we don't spend as much time talking about the Saints. And I was just curious, one of the things Coach Allen talked about post-game in the press conference was that he brought up the stat that the Saints had run the ball. They were averaging, but he said it was best in the NFL, 2.9 yards prior to contact. And it's, I've heard this stat before, but you don't hear it a great deal. And I would imagine in your aspect and from a running game, that, I guess, put that into perspective for me.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, but it tells you that they are blocking up the line of scrimmage, and normally the backs are getting to the second and third level is basically what that means. And right. So – the D-line, they're out of the equation. So you're getting a hat on a hat. Even from an offensive lineman's perspective that is pushing up to the linebackers, which is considered the second level, you're getting a hat on him. And if you aren't getting a hat on him, he isn't getting a hand on you until you're right at 3 yards down the field or, you know, from where the ball is snapped. Normally, a running back, you want to average 4.5 yards per carry. If I am at 3 yards before I get touched, I can fall forward for, you know, one yard just in itself. So at some point, you're going to make a man miss, and that's a third-level guy, and that's where the big runs come out. So you talk about having plus 10, plus 20, plus 30-yard runs. That's what they're able to do, but – from an assignment standpoint, they know what they're supposed to do because they're getting a hat on a hat. Now, it's can you break a big one, or if you aren't breaking a big one, you're getting plus 7, plus 8 type runs.
Well, last year, Alvin's longest run from scrimmage was 17. He had 17,
yeah, 17
on Sunday,
yards.
On Sunday,
yeah.
Right? And Jamal had a 14-yarder. Taysom had a 12-yarder. I mean, it's, you know, it's not 20-plus, but let me tell you, man, those runs were huge.
Here's the other thing. If you go back and you look at it, there were a couple runs, and this is no knock on the receiver because, I mean, it is what it is. There's a couple runs that if a receiver and or a tight end finish, I won't even say just receiver, if the Saints finish some blocks, just finish, you will have some plus 30-yard runs, even maybe even longer, but at least plus 30. I mean, because as a back, particularly as a running back, even Taysom, and I'm going to throw you in there, if you get up on the safety more than once in a game and you can't make him miss, shame on you. Shame on you. You can't let a safety tackle you 100% of the time. You can't let a corner tackle you 100% of the time. So those got to be 50-50. I've got to win my 50-50 runs where I'm matched up on a safety or a corner, and I've got to be able to make him miss, and I got to house call something. I just can't allow that guy to tackle me and he be the last line of defense every time and he makes that tackle. At some point, I have to make him miss and be able to make a house call.
I think that's what you talked about with Alvin's long run, is that he had that one safety to beat.
That's
and
it.
If he, when he sees that film, he's going to go, man, I should have beat
close.
That dude.
Right. I'm close.
Yeah.
I'm close to breaking it. And so that's the next level as a player that you have to take it to. And so I was originally fussing about the receivers not finishing blocks, but then it popped up in my head. No, there was one inside run, and I think it kind of surprised Fuaga, you know, because he's already 8 yards down the field. You're normally thinking, the play is over. But Alvin ended up right on his hip. And not to say that it was his guy that fell off, because I don't think it was. I think it was a safety. But it was his guy that Alvin kind of saw as a runner. You see the flash of another color, and now you say, oh, I can't go there. I have to take this angle and maybe approach this guy by taking half a man. But if I finish that run, now I have a three-way go at that defender where I can set him up, where I can hit him inside, I can hit him right, I can go right at him. And it's just playing games. I mean, it's playing the game, but it doesn't happen if the guys up front, if they don't get a hat on hat. And now every run I'm having to make a guy miss at the line of scrimmage or in the backfield, man, that's tough sled.
2.9 yards before contact. We'll talk a little LSU at South Carolina when we come back from the break. This is Fans of the Pro. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister here on WWLAMFM.com. Always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back to Fans of the Pro. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister until 6 o'clock tonight. Joining us now, Wilson Alexander covers LSU for the Advocate and the Times-Picayune. The Tigers, 16th ranked, 1-1, take on South Carolina, 2-0, and as they begin SEC play on the road. 11 o'clock in the morning Central Time, but a noon kickoff in South Carolina. Wilson, how are you this afternoon?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We are well. You're on with Deuce McAllister and myself. Just kind of break it down for us. It feels like the LSU season the last couple of years has kind of gone on that opening game. Then you come home and you kind of get your feet under you. Then you begin the SEC. So it just kind of break this down for us as they begin SEC play against South Carolina.
Yeah, you know, I came across a stat today how there are two coaches in LSU history who have lost a season opener and then gone on to win 10 games. Brian Kelly and Paul Dietzel. Dietzel did it in 1961. Kelly is now trying to do it for the third straight year. LSU is, unfortunately for them, very familiar with this position of losing the season opener now here for the fifth straight season, the third under Kelly, kind of having a tune-up game in week two and then going into SEC play in week three. The last 2 years, that started with Mississippi State. Now here, it's on the road at South Carolina. You've got an LSU team that's trying to work through a few different things, get the run game going on the offensive side, continue to improve on the defensive side in a couple of different ways, and make up for the loss of Jacoby and Guillory up front. And so, you know, now it's about trying to get those things cleaned up and to try to make the 12-team college football playoff in year three. That is still going to be this team's goal, but their margin for error, once again, is really, really, really slim.
Yeah, Wilson, that's what I was going to really ask you about from an offensive standpoint, trying to get that run game going. You know about the weapons on the outside, but in the backfield and really with up front, you probably hadn't established the run as you would want to at this point, and losing one of your lead backs definitely hurts you in that standpoint. But just tell us so far, in your opinion, what they have to do to be able to have a little bit more balance or at least run the football against Carolina.
They have to be able to get some kind of just push up front. I mean, LSU's got these different run schemes kind of in place this year compared to last year when they were very heavy inside zone read with Jaden Daniels. Now it's much more trying to lean on the offensive line. And, you know, you're seeing counters, you're seeing, you know, pulling guards on those sorts of plays. You're seeing, you know, tosses out from the shotgun. That's different from what LSU did the last few years. And it just, for whatever reason, hasn't really taken hold. And that's surprising because you've got an offensive line with four returning starters. I mean, all four guys who have played together for 3 years. And while they were doing some different things the last 2 years in the run game, This hasn't worked yet. Brad Davis told the players on Tuesday he was probably going to be spending the night at the facility trying to kind of work through these things. Brian Kelly said this week that kind of try to tamp down concerns, talking about, you know, they had the ground a lot of loaded boxes, so they've checked to some pass plays and some quick game stuff, and the passing game is almost acts as an extension of the run game, and that he thinks that balance is just, you know, doing both things effectively, not necessarily being 50-50, you know, moving forward. But you hear from the players this week, especially Emory Jones, starting right tackle, and they know this is unacceptable. You know, Will Campbell coming out of this preseason was saying, like, we're going to run the football. We don't mind saying it to everybody, like, we're going to run the football, and they haven't been able to do that. Other than a little stretch there in the third quarter with John Emery against USC, they've been really ineffective in the run game. I mean, only 21 carries for 64 yards against Nichols, and that's not going to get it done as you go into SEC play.
Especially a South Carolina defense, you know, they're pretty strong in their SEC opener. They go on the road, win at Kentucky 31-6, Kentucky just 44 total yards passing. So it does feel like a strength versus strength. LSU's offensive line, I mean, they, you know, haven't given up a sack in two games against the South Carolina defensive front. You know, something's got to give for one side.
Absolutely. That's definitely where this game seems to come down to, is which of those strengths is going to be able to kind of top the other one. South Carolina's defense ranks top 10 nationally in sacks, tackles for loss, forced fumbles, and interceptions. They've created quite a bit of havoc. They got 10 sacks, 19 tackles for loss, really led by their two edge rushers, Dylan Stewart and Kyle Kennard. Stewart's a freshman who's been really impressive through 2 weeks. Kennard's a senior. They've also got two big defensive tackles, Tonka Hemingway being one of them. The name of the other is suddenly slipping my memory. But guys who are, you know, 6'4", 300-plus pounds right there in the middle. And that's really been the strength of this South Carolina defense. But they've got some solid players in the secondary as well, Kilgore being the name to know back there. And that's really why they got out to such a big lead against Kentucky. But offensively, they don't really scare you in a lot of ways. So if LSU's offensive line, it's really a big game for them. If they can establish the run, then LSU should probably be you know, I think in a comfortable position in this game, because it might be hard for South Carolina's offense to keep up, even though that's kind of on the other side of the ball, weakness versus weakness. But, you know, that defensive front for South Carolina and how LSU is able to handle them is really where this comes down to. Although LSU's offensive line has struggled in the running game, they have yet to allow a sack this season, so that's a good sign.
Wilson, are you in Columbia?
Yes, I'll be there. Currently in Charlotte, but yeah, we'll be in Columbia.
No. So that's why I was gonna ask you, you know, just what the feel was in the city, and you know, just what the enthusiasm that you could feel around it. But I mean, even in Charlotte, that's a city that pretty much pulls for USC for South Carolina.
Yeah, I haven't been able to get a sense of that from where we are, unfortunately, yet. The most I can say about that is just sort of talking to people who cover South Carolina. There's clearly a buzz that hasn't been there consistently for a while. And, I mean, you know, College Game Day is going down there this weekend. The weather seems like it's going to end up cooperating tomorrow. There was some thunderstorms in the forecast. We'll see kind of how that factors into things. But, you know, South Carolina, after struggling week one against Old Dominion, you know, it was all of a sudden kind of a trendy little team. And I don't know why I said little, but, like, you know, they're kind of a trendy team there. I mean, in terms of, like, can they start to create any sort of noise? And a win against LSU would do that. So, especially with College Game Day coming to town, it sounds like there's a lot of excitement down there.
Talking about the quarterbacks a little bit, certainly as LSU tries to find, you know, the replacement for John Emery, you know, Nussmeier with 6 touchdown passes last week against Lenoris Sellers, who can really, you know, had 2 touchdown passes, but also can move the ball with his feet, and kind of look at that matchup a little bit.
You're saying, I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, just talk about the two quarterbacks, Nussmeier against Lenoris Sellers. Sellers, you know, has moved the ball throwing, but also is a threat to run as well.
Yeah, he is. You know, Lenoris Sellers is someone that Brian Kelly compared to sort of an Anthony Richardson type in terms of really big and physical. He ran, I think, 22 times for about 68 yards in South Carolina's opening game. Didn't run as much against Kentucky, but they also have Robbie Ashford, his backup, who LSU fans might remember from Auburn. A guy who can be pretty fast. He came in there and ran the ball six times against Kentucky. And that's what really South Carolina really wants to do, is run the football. I mean, they're tied with Tennessee for ninth, the most rush attempts in the SEC through two games with 90. That is their identity. They haven't been very successful with it. They're averaging less than 3 yards per carry, but that's still what they want to do. And Sellers is a part of that in the run game with the quarterback. But he's also got a big arm. But they just don't have necessarily the weapons on the outside that, like, LSU has. Whereas with Nussmeier, that's what this offense has been to this point. You know, it's been, we're literally leaning on him and these wide receivers, guys like Kyron Lacy and Aaron Anderson, who's really stepped up, and some others, and Mason Taylor from the tight end position. And that's going to maybe continue to be what LSU has to go to as its strength, is, you know, Nussmeier in the passing game. The one element that they need to kind of continue to work on in that passing game is the deep shots, which we know Garrett has the arm strength for. They just haven't really connected on anything deep downfield yet that's really impactful this season, other than, I suppose, a 41-yarder to Aaron Anderson there against USC.
Wilson Alexander, coverage LSU for the Advocate Times Picayune. Really, really appreciate your time on this Friday afternoon. Be safe driving down to Columbia tomorrow with all the game day traffic, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, y'all, for having me. Have a great weekend.
Same to you.
Have fun. Thank you.
The Tigers in college game day. Also want to say quickly, Magazine Pizza. Don't forget, 1068 Magazine. Dine in or deliver the best gourmet pizza selection in town. Magazine Pizza also has pastas, sandwiches, wings, and salads. MagazinePizza.com. They want to thank them for feeding our Saints broadcast team over the weekend and coming weekend. So we'll talk a little Tulane football when we come back. Tulane on the road against the 15th ranked Oklahoma Sooners. That and more as Fans of the Pros rolls on. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister on WWLAMFM.com, always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Fans of the Pro. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister. Talked a little LSU. Now we'll talk a little Tulane with Tulane sideline reporter as well as host of the Before the Whistle podcast, Maddie Hudak. Maddie, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well down in Oklahoma now.
Yeah, so I spent some time a little south of there in Lawton, Oklahoma. So I've been at the Norman game day experience, and it is impressive. 2:30 tomorrow in Norman. Really, I'm just kind of curious, like, how you kind of think Tulane bounces back when they had Kansas State at home last weekend. Kansas State ranked 16th at the time, and Tulane led 17-10, 20-10, 27-20, but end up falling and you know, losing 34-27, and then you got to go on the road against Oklahoma, who actually struggled against Houston last week, still got the W, but how do you think Tulane bounces back this weekend?
I think that they have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder now, and, you know, not that that game necessarily got stolen from them, because ultimately, as you just kind of said, they let the lead get away from them down to the end, but they really battled until the final snap during that game, and, you know, adversity kind of just seemed to keep hitting them at the end of the game. You'd think after that scoop and score, fumble recovery for the touchdown, that the offense might get a little more conservative or crumble a little bit, and I thought that the defense, to hold them three and out, give the offense a chance to go back and drive the ball down. I think that we saw really complete game from Tulane last weekend, and I think they can really see the pathway for themselves now. And with Oklahoma having a lot of injuries, especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think it's an opportunity for Tulane to really bounce back and take advantage of a depleted team.
Matty, and I'll say it for you, they were robbed in that game. I mean, you can talk about, yes, defensively, you shouldn't have given up, you know, the touchdown or whatever, having a lead, but that was not a pass interference. The offensive guy has to be able to release off the line of scrimmage. I understand what the official is looking at and what he's trying to call. He thought it was a pick, you know, and he thought it was a pick play, and that was not pass interference on the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. And just the way that game kind of got called in general, it felt like the refs were just inserting themselves a lot in the second half of the game. And whenever that starts to really happen, not a good feeling. And I thought that, you know, again, in spite of what kind of felt like was working against them at a home game, I thought Tulane really shut out that noise really well and didn't let any of that frustration spill over onto the field. We were frustrated on the sideline for sure.
Well, when you talk about, you know, just playing with a chip on your shoulder, having another ranked opponent, going on the road, knowing, you know, you'll have your section, really, that's it, in that stadium that it's pulling for you. Just tell me what you've seen from this team so far this week, and, you know, just the approach that they're going to take. Is it us against them?
I think it really is. Obviously, the hurricane kind of truncated what I think they would have liked a little more practice this week, but I also think the team being together in a hotel for two or three nights really kind of helps that bonding mentality going into this weekend. But from what I've heard, Tulane has a pretty good travel contingency coming up here, but this team in the last couple of seasons really has thrived in an away environment, in that kind of hostile road environment. And when we were in the Saints practice facility, I noticed, you know, they start practicing and really playing that opponent crowd noise really, really loud to get Darian Mensah especially used to having to kind of call snaps for the first time in a stadium where he can't really hear his own voice. And so seeing that preparation this week was super important.
I was curious, give me a sense of what the impact was for Tulane. We were all kind of dealing with our own, private situation with Francine. How did it impact them from what they wanted to do this past week?
I think they probably would have wanted to practice a little more outside, especially having to share the facility with the Saints. I think that it was a pretty short practice on it was Wednesday, I believe, before the Saints wanted to get in there and practice. I'm not sure if they were really able to do anything yesterday. And then having the travel day today, probably not as much practice as you would have liked, but especially after kind of getting a little beat up in that game, I think having full health going into this weekend is going to be just as important as those practice reps. And so you have a team with pretty fresh legs coming into this weekend. And again, you really can't say the same about Oklahoma on their side.
Maddie, last one from me. What do you think Tulane has to do to be successful on tomorrow?
So they're going to have an easier coverage to throw against, but it's going to be, I think, a lot more difficult in terms of the skill at all three levels of Oklahoma's defense. Darian's not going to have the same three safety coverage that he's going to have to throw into. So with that in mind, you would really like to see them execute a little bit better. We've seen just Tulane have a lot of penalties, and I know last week's they're up in the air as to how, you know, correct they may have been, but they had a lot in their season opener as well, and that can extend drives and have those little mistakes kind of build up on top of one another. So you'd like to see that. And Oklahoma, I think they're tied with two other schools leading the nation with 8 turnovers in 2 games and a +7 margin in turnovers. So having that going into this weekend, protecting the football to me is really, really going to be important. But Tulane established their run last weekend, and I thought you saw a really balanced offense from them. So I think really having the defense and the pass rush especially come together, this is a team where they're on their third center. There's so many guys on their offensive line that are banged up that this is definitely an opportunity for that pass rush to really get generating. And Jackson Arnold is a lot less mobile than what they had to face in Avery Johnson last weekend.
And as an alumnus, I mean, there was a time, and it would be years ago, that a Tulane team traveling to Oklahoma and Norman would be in awe of the situation. But it just feels like that's just so different now. This is not that Tulane. They've been there, played ranked opponents, beaten ranked opponents on the road. It just feels like they're no longer in awe of just being in the situation. That's not enough anymore.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, being in awe of the situation. I think that's kind of been the last couple of years for people, but it's really settled in that this team is a contender now. But having this many new faces, you really just didn't know for sure. But, you know, even though the 10th anniversary of Yeoman Stadium, they still had a loss there. To be able to build on that, they've always had that one Power 5 game that either went in their favor with Kansas State or got away from them, and everyone looked back on it last year with Ole Miss. I think having the opportunity to try to and get another one of these big wins, that's really not lost on these guys. But I think they can see the pathway now in a way that they might have not been able to see after the first game with just so many new guys, and knowing they can really trust their quarterback in Darian Mensah. This team's in a really, really good place heading into their first road opponent.
Well, we appreciate your time. Enjoy your time in Norman. You will enjoy the game tomorrow just from an atmosphere standpoint. It is unique. There's nothing going on in Oklahoma except for Norman on Saturday. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I missed out on it due to Ida the first time, so looking forward to seeing it this time.
You bet. Enjoy the game. Maddie Hudak, Tulane sideline reporter. Also, she is the host of Before the Whistle podcast. So Tulane and Oklahoma tomorrow at 2:30. Got to take a break. Mike Hoss, Deuce McAllister, fans in the pro. We'll talk about Deuce's keys to a Saints victory when we come back for one final block here on Fans of the Pro. Keep it right here. And welcome back, and we shall do just that. We will talk to James, who's been on hold, talking about Saints and Cowboys. James, welcome to the show. You're on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talking text line with Deuce McAllister.
All right, thanks, guys. So, before I even looked at the overall schedule, the first thing that came to my mind was I know we were playing Dallas and the Bulls. Zimmer and Bowles are the two guys that are the two defensive coordinators that it's hard. They don't put a lot of stuff on tape. I mean, Bowles will come out of his head the day or two before the game and come up with certain blitz packages, and that's not good for a young, inexperienced line. And Zimmer, I remember when he came up the middle with his guys against Sean in the playoffs. So everybody knows that he's going to get chipped, speaking of Parsons. But I think he's going to come up the middle more than I think a lot of guys think. I'm looking at Parsons trying to come up the middle. I think even if Ferguson's not playing, that guy, the last year's rookie, he's more talented. I mean, he's a better – put it this way. I think they know that we have a weakness defending the tight end, at least we did last year. And I don't see Ferguson not playing, or if he plays,
I don't think he's going to play. He hasn't practiced yet.
Yeah, Ferguson, I don't think he plays. They're listing him, but I don't think he plays. He'll probably be ruled out tomorrow. And moving Parsons to the A-gap, that doesn't bother me. It's when he loops. That's what bothers you. Because if he's just going to rush from the A-gap, I'm fine with that. It's when he is a looper that he becomes a problem.
Because of his speed.
So with that, I was also impressed the first game, obviously a regular season. But the thing that impressed me more than anything was that we converted on third down, running the ball. I love that, man. And they're coming this weekend. They're coming, and especially coming on third down. And I think Kubiak knows Zimmer better than I think Sean knows Zimmer, just because. You know, Sean Zimmer and Shanahan have had some kind of relationship, or you know, they compete against one another. So Kubiak's been sitting there next to Shanahan. I expect him to run the ball, and I think we can win the game. Now, the thing that really shocked me about the Cowboys, I don't know if you guys saw the game. They kicked the 66 yarder. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's sitting on our bench that kicked the 65 yarder. That he called it off because he called a timeout. But that just goes to show what kind of strong
delay
leg
the
that
game.
He has. Yeah. But he's got a hell of a leg, is what I'm saying.
So then it was a 71 yarder, and he stayed on the field. But they ended up trying to throw a Hail Mary.
Right, but he's got a hell of a leg, and this will be the first game that they've played since they got embarrassed by the Packers. But up until that game, they had a two-year win streak at home, so that's going to be on their mind, I'm sure.
Yep, thank you, James. We appreciate the phone call, and I agree. There, you can't argue with Dallas's home record not in the playoffs. They are dominating.
Yeah, so, regular season, they've played well. I mean, but that's been Dallas's MO right. The last couple of years. It's once they get to the playoffs, they don't show up. But, I mean, for the Saints, Sean and Zim were very close. So Sean knew Zim well. I mean, it may have been a different look. We didn't block very well as far as the double A gap. But, I mean, from a prepared standpoint, I don't think that they're going to throw a lot at you that you haven't seen. You know, whether it's, hey, you know, there are not many blitzes that teams are just creating out of the blue air. Now, you may not have prepared for them a lot, but it's not like that they haven't run this certain blitz. I mean, because there's only so many blitzes that teams are going to run. That's just, I don't know anybody that's creating a new look. You know, you're zone blitzing, you're weak, you're strong, it's double A, it's zero. You know, I don't know what else you're creating. But anyway, if you execute, you give yourself a chance. He talked about something. The Saints have to run the football. I don't think the Saints will be successful if they do not run the football. So whether that's first down, third down, whatever it may be, the Saints have to run the football.
To be able to maintain your offense. You can't get behind.
Not even maintain your offense. You can get behind. I'm not worried about them getting behind. They can fall down, you know, 10 points, 14 points. You still have to be able to run the football. I mean, I don't think that you're going to be very successful against this team having to drop back pass 40 times. You're just not going to be successful. Your offense is not built that way. You have to be able to run the football, even if it's some tough sledding, so to speak, as far as yards-wise. I'm fine having to punt. I'm fine having to put defense out there and let them play the game. What you can't do is give up on the run because you're not having a lot of success early, and now you allow this team just to say, oh, we can just rush the quarterback. We don't have to worry about them running the ball.
Shorten the game, so to speak, because you just got to grind it out. I mean, flip it for me.
Yeah, it's not even shortening. In a sense, yes, you're shortening the game. But really, that's just your offense. You're going to run the ball. That's week in and week out, and that's why taking your team on the road, you want to run the football. I mean, it's not necessarily because you fear them offensively. That's just who you are from. That's your identity as a team.
So then defensively against Dallas's offense, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks at wide receiver, Ezekiel Elliott at running back.
Go be a bully. That's what I want you to do. Go be a bully. That's what the Saints have to do on defense. You got to go and be a bully because they want to play fast. They want to get it to the toys. You got to hit the quarterback. You have to affect the quarterback. And if I have to send pressure, then that means I'm going to leave somebody on the island. I don't want to get beat over the top, but I want to contest at the catch point. But you can't allow that team just to play fast. You can't allow Dak to feel comfortable in the pocket. You've got to make him move a little bit. Dak has the ability to run. I don't know if Dak really wants to run. He will, but, you know, you can't allow Dak to just break containment, but you've got to hit him as well.
And move the pocket. They'll move the pocket with him just to create some throwing lanes for him.
Well,
at
yeah.
least against Cleveland.
Well, that was because of that D-line. And right. I think that they respect the Saints in the same manner, you know. And so it'll be interesting. Win the line of scrimmage, run the football, and then be a bully on defense.
Love it. Be a bully. That'll be the T-shirts we're wearing on Sunday morning. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Fans and the Pros. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth and to all of our guests this afternoon and to my good friend Deuce McAllister for being a part of this show. It's a big one on Sunday. Thanks for listening to Fans and the Pro. The Brian Kelly Show is up next, and it's high school football. Keep it right here. Welcome back, Fans and the Pro. My host, Deuce McAllister. Talked a little LSU. Now we'll talk a little Tulane with Tulane sideline reporter as well as host of the Before the Whistle podcast, Maddie Hudak. Maddie, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well down in Oklahoma now.
Yeah, so I spent some time a little south of there in Lawton, Oklahoma. So I've been at the Norman game day experience, and it is impressive. 2:30 tomorrow in Norman. Really, I'm just kind of curious like how you kind of think Tulane bounces back when they had Kansas State at home. Last weekend, Kansas State ranked 16th at the time, and Tulane led 17-10, 20-10, 27-20, but end up falling and you know, losing 34-27. And then you got to go on the road against Oklahoma, who actually struggled against Houston last week, still got the W. But how do you think Tulane bounces back this weekend?
I think that they have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder now. And, you know, not that that game necessarily got stolen from them, because ultimately, as you just kind of said, they let the lead get away from them down to the end. But they really battled until the final snap during that game. And, you know, adversity kind of just seemed to keep hitting them at the end of the game. You'd think after that scoop and score, fumble recovery for the touchdown, that the offense might get a little more conservative or crumble a little bit. And I thought that the defense, to hold them 3-and-out, give the offense a chance to go back and drive the ball down. I think that we saw a really complete game from Tulane last weekend, and I think they can really see the pathway for themselves now. And with Oklahoma having a lot of injuries, especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think it's an opportunity for Tulane to really bounce back and take advantage of a depleted team.
Maddie, and I'll say it for you, they were robbed in that game. I mean, you can talk about, yes, defensively, you shouldn't have given up, you know, the touchdown or whatever, having a lead, but that was not a pass interference. The offensive guy has to be able to release off the line of scrimmage. I understand what the official is looking at and what he's trying to call. He thought it was a pick, you know, and he thought it was a pick play, and that was not pass interference on the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. And just the way that game kind of got called in general, it felt like the refs were just inserting themselves a lot in the second half of the game. And whenever that starts to really happen, not a good feeling. And I thought that, you know, again, in spite of what kind of felt like was working against them at a home game, I thought Tulane really shut out that noise really well and didn't let any of that frustration spill over onto the field. We were frustrated on the sideline for sure.
Well, when you talk about, you know, just playing with a chip on your shoulder, having another ranked opponent, going on the road, knowing, you know, you'll have your section, really, that's it, in that stadium that it's pulling for you. Just tell me what you've seen from this team so far this week, and, you know, just the approach that they're going to take. Is it us against them?
I think it really is. Obviously, the hurricane kind of truncated what I think they would have liked a little more practice this week. But I also think the team being together in a hotel for two or three nights really kind of helps that bonding mentality going into this weekend. But from what I've heard, Tulane has a pretty good travel contingency coming up here, but this team in the last couple of seasons really has thrived in an away environment, in that kind of hostile road environment. And when we were in the Saints practice facility, I noticed, you know, they start practicing and really playing that opponent crowd noise really, really loud to get Darian Mensah especially used to having to kind of call snaps for the first time in a stadium where he can't really hear his own voice. And so seeing that preparation this week was super important.
I was curious, give me a sense of what the impact was for Tulane. We were all kind of dealing with our own, private situation with Francine. How did it impact them from what they wanted to do this past week?
I think they probably would have wanted to practice a little more outside, especially having to share the facility with the Saints. I think that it was a pretty short practice on it was Wednesday, I believe, before the Saints wanted to get in there and practice. I'm not sure if they were really able to do anything yesterday. And then having the travel day today, probably not as much practice as you would have liked, but especially after kind of getting a little beat up in that game, I think having full health going into this weekend is going to be just as important as those practice reps. And so you have a team with pretty fresh legs coming into this weekend. And again, you really can't say the same about Oklahoma on their side.
Maddie, last one for me. What do you think Tulane has to do to be successful on tomorrow?
So they're going to have an easier coverage to throw against, but it's going to be, I think, a lot more difficult in terms of the skill at all three levels of Oklahoma's defense. Darian's not going to have the same three safety coverage that he's going to have to throw into. So with that in mind, you'd really like to see them execute a little bit better. We've seen just Tulane have a lot of penalties, and I know last week's they're up in the air as to how, you know, correct they may have been, but they had a lot in their season opener as well, and that can extend drives and have those little mistakes kind of build up on top of one another. So you'd like to see that. And Oklahoma, I think they're tied with two other schools leading the nation with 8 turnovers in 2 games and a +7 margin in turnovers. So having that going into this weekend, protecting the football to me is really, really going to be important. But Tulane established their run last weekend, and I thought you saw a really balanced offense from them. So I think really having the defense and the pass rush especially come together, this is a team where they're on their third center. There's so many guys on their offensive line that are banged up that this is definitely an opportunity for that pass rush to really get generating. And Jackson Arnold is a lot less mobile than what they had to face in Avery Johnson last weekend.
And as an alumnus, I mean, there was a time, and it would be years ago, that a Tulane team traveling to Oklahoma and Norman would be in awe of the situation. But it just feels like that's just so different now. This is not that Tulane. They've been there, played ranked opponents, beaten ranked opponents on the road. It just feels like they're no longer in awe of just being in the situation. That's not enough anymore.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, being in awe of the situation. I think that's kind of been the last couple of years for people, but it's really settled in that this team is a contender now. But having this many new faces, you really just didn't know for sure. But, you know, even though the 10th anniversary of Yeoman Stadium, they still had a loss there. To be able to build on that, they've always had that one Power 5 game that either went in their favor with Kansas State or got away from them, and everyone looked back on it last year with Ole Miss. I think having the opportunity to try to and get another one of these big wins, that's really not lost on these guys. But I think they can see the pathway now in a way that they might have not been able to see after the first game with just so many new guys, and knowing they can really trust their quarterback in Darian Mensah. This team's in a really, really good place heading into their first road opponent.
Well, we appreciate your time. Enjoy your time in Norman. You will enjoy the game tomorrow just from an atmosphere standpoint. It is unique. There's nothing going on in Oklahoma except for Norman on Saturday. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I missed out on it due to Ida the first time, so looking forward to seeing it this time.
You bet. Enjoy the game. Maddie Hudak, Tulane sideline reporter. Also, she is the host of Before the Whistle podcast. So Tulane and Oklahoma tomorrow at 2:30. Got to take a break. Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister, fans in the pro. We'll talk about Deuce's keys to a Saints victory when we come back for one final block here on Fans of the Pro. Keep it right here. And welcome back, and we shall do just that. We will talk to James, who's been on hold, talking about Saints and Cowboys. James, welcome to the show. You're on the Oakenheart Jewelers Talking text line with Deuce McAllister.
All right, thanks, guys. So, before I even looked at the overall schedule, the first thing that came to my mind was I know we were playing Dallas and the Bulls. Zimmer and Bowles are the two guys that are the two defensive coordinators that it's hard. They don't put a lot of stuff on tape. I mean, Bowles will come out of his head the day or two before the game and come up with certain blitz packages, and that's not good for a young, inexperienced line. And Zimmer, I remember when he came up the middle with his guys against Sean in the playoffs. So everybody knows that he's going to get chipped, speaking of Parsons. But I think he's going to come up the middle more than I think a lot of guys think. I'm looking at Parsons trying to come up the middle. I think even if Ferguson's not playing, that guy, the last year's rookie, he's more talented. I mean, he's a better – put it this way. I think they know that we have a weakness defending the tight end, at least we did last year. And I don't see Ferguson not playing, or if he plays,
I don't think he's going to play. He hasn't practiced yet.
Yeah, Ferguson, I don't think he plays. They're listing him, but I don't think he plays. He'll probably be ruled out tomorrow. And moving Parsons to the A-gap, that doesn't bother me. It's when he loops. That's what bothers you. Because if he's just going to rush from the A-gap, I'm fine with that. It's when he is a looper that he becomes a problem.
Because of his speed.
So with that, I was also impressed the first game, obviously a regular season. But the thing that impressed me more than anything was that we converted on third down, running the ball. I love that, man. And they're coming this weekend. They're coming, and especially coming on third down. And I think Kubiak knows Zimmer better than I think Sean knows Zimmer, just because. You know, Sean Zimmer and Shanahan have had some kind of relationship, or they compete against one another. So Kubiak's been sitting there next to Shanahan. I expect him to run the ball, and I think we can win the game. Now, the thing that really shocked me about the Cowboys, I don't know if you guys saw the game. They kicked the 66 yarder. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's sitting on our bench that kicked the 65 yarder. That he called it off because he called a timeout. But that just goes to see what kind of strong leg that game. He has. Yeah. But he's got a hell of a leg, is what I'm saying.
So then it was a 71 yarder, and he stayed on the field. But they ended up trying to throw a Hail Mary.
Right, but he's got a hell of a leg, and this will be the first game that they've played since they got embarrassed by the Packers. But up until that game, they had a two-year win streak at home, so that's going to be on their mind, I'm sure.
Yep. Well, thank you, James. We appreciate the phone call, and I agree. They're you can't argue with Dallas's home record not in the playoffs. They are dominating.
Yeah, so, regular season, they've played well. I mean, but that's been Dallas's MO the last couple of years. It's once they get to the playoffs, they don't show up. But, I mean, for the Saints, Sean and Zim were very close. So Sean knew Zim well. I mean, it may have been a different look. We didn't block very well as far as the double A gap. But, I mean, from a prepared standpoint, I don't think that they're going to throw a lot at you that you haven't seen. You know, whether it's, hey, you know, there are not many blitzes that teams are just creating out of the blue air. Now, you may not have prepared for them a lot, but it's not like that they haven't run this certain blitz. I mean, because there's only so many blitzes that teams are going to run. I don't know anybody that's creating a new look. You know, you're zone blitzing, you're weak, you're strong, it's double A, it's zero. You know, I don't know what else you're creating. But anyway, if you execute, you give yourself a chance. He talked about something. The Saints have to run the football. I don't think the Saints will be successful if they do not run the football. So whether that's first down, third down, whatever it may be, the Saints have to run the football.
To be able to maintain your offense. You can't even maintain your offense.
You can get behind. I'm not worried about them getting behind. They can fall down, you know, 10 points, 14 points. You still have to be able to run the football. I mean, I don't think that you're going to be very successful against this team having to drop back pass 40 times. You're just not going to be successful. Your offense is not built that way. You have to be able to run the football, even if it's some tough sledding, so to speak, as far as yards-wise. I'm fine having to punt. I'm fine having to put defense out there and let them play the game. What you can't do is give up on the run because you're not having a lot of success early, and now you allow this team just to say, oh, we can just rush the quarterback. We don't have to worry about them running the ball.
Shorten the game, so to speak, because you just got to grind it out. I mean, what about flip it for me?
Yeah, it's not even shortening in the game. In a sense, yes, you're shortening the game. But really, that's just your offense. You're going to run the ball. That's week in and week out, and that's why taking your team on the road, you want to run the football. I mean, it's not necessarily because you fear them offensively. That's just who you are. That's your identity as a team.
So then defensively against Dallas's offense, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks at wide receiver, Ezekiel Elliott at running back.
Go be a bully. That's what I want you to do. Go be a bully. That's what the Saints have to do on defense. You got to go and be a bully because they want to play fast. They want to get it to the toys. You got to hit the quarterback. You have to affect the quarterback. And if I have to send pressure, then that means I'm going to leave somebody on the island. I don't want to get beat over the top, but I want to contest at the catch point. But you can't allow that team just to play fast. You can't allow Dak to feel comfortable in the pocket. You've got to make him move a little bit. Dak has the ability to run. I don't know if Dak really wants to run. He will, but, you know, you can't allow Dak to just break containment, but you've got to hit him as well.
And move the pocket. They'll move the pocket with him just to create some throwing lanes for him.
Well,
against Cleveland.
Well, that was because of that D-line. And right. I think that they respect the Saints in the same manner, you know. And so it'll be interesting. Win the line of scrimmage, run the football, and then be a bully on defense.
Love it. Be a bully. That'll be the T-shirts we're wearing on Sunday morning. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Fans and the Pros. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth and to all of our guests this afternoon and to my good friend Deuce McAllister for being a part of this show. It's a big one on Sunday. Thanks for listening to Fans and the Pro. The Brian Kelly Show is up next, and it's high school football. Keep it right here.